Seriously? Are you just been really restrained and you haven't even... You scored. The Masters kid scored. Is that right? Yep. What did you score? A massive Lego chopper. Alrighty, that, how much did that set them back? I don't even want to know how much that cost Mum and Dad there. I mean, what is the essence of Christmas? Who else scored? Desperate, desperate times. Well, you know, I haven't scored yet because we've got to wait till we get home. But what is the essence of an authentic Christmas? There's lots of answers to that question, especially if you've got a camera as good as the one that I used for that Vox Pop there. Because everyone who you point that camera at thinks they're auditioning for Home and Away and they all want to be on it. So we've got a million answers for it. But here's a few others that, or perhaps some that we actually have mentioned before, and we'll put up a couple of pictures there that you can see. Now, there's what's the essence of Christmas there? Family? Food? Something like that. What's the essence of Christmas there? Shopping. And who's been there? Deepwater Plaza? Was that bearable this year? The essence of Christmas, what do you got on that one? Santa, isn't it? I think for many people they figure it's Santa. Santa surfing. Santa. And kids really enjoying being with Santa by the looks of things. That's kind of an Australian Santa there. And I'm not quite sure what that is there. That's not Santa, at least it's not my view of him. What's the true essence of Christmas? I want to suggest this morning it's hope. Hope is the true essence of Christmas. There's a number of things you might say in that, but hope has got to be one of those things that's up there. They say human beings can last 40 days without food. We can last 4 days without water. We can last 4 minutes without air, but we can't last a moment without hope. In a world like ours, which is really broken, and you remember that as we've experienced hope is as necessary to the soul as oxygen is to the heart. And Christmas, properly understood, is God's guarantee that as broken as our world is, we live in a period where we live in a world where God says he intends us for hope. You know, there's a famous episode took place in World War I. It took place on Christmas Day in 1914. And across the trenches all along the Western Front, soldiers heard on either side of the trenches people singing carols. The sound of Silent Night drifts from one side to the other. And they're wondering what is happening. After a little while, they're kind of wondering if it's safe. People, soldiers, either on the German side and the Allied side, figured it was safe. They popped their heads up. They climbed out of their foxholes. They walked across into no man's land. And they exchanged gifts. They sung carols together. It was extraordinary. And then the next day, well, they climbed back into their foxholes. They began shooting each other again. And at the end of it's quite tragic, but Christmas embodies something good and people sense it, don't they? It's God's guarantee of hope is what's behind it. It's God's guarantee that he says to the world that we live in, broken as it is, he intends us for hope that comes in the birth of his son. And you see it, actually, I'm going to speak just for a few moments from that Bible reading you've got on the sheet there. But you see it in sentence 10, if you come down, gee, around about two-thirds of the way down the sheet there, in those words, don't be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy. The hope God offers in Jesus is good news that's meant to bring peace and joy. It's a gift to be received. So it requires a response. But the response is so often silence. Very, very strange. You will have noticed it on the video there. When people talk about the real and authentic Christmas, and I had lots of fun shooting that video, Jesus is rarely mentioned. It is like the annual Christmas play we had at the local primary school. And in the scene at the stable, kind of when the cattle, you know how the cattle are in that nativity scene and they do their bit, they're mooing or they're kind of nuzzling or whatever it is that cattle actually do. And the shepherds have done their visit and they've gone. And the wise men have come and they've left their gold and their frankincense and their myrrh kind of at Mary and Joseph's feet and they've done their bit and they've gone. All the lights on the stage were meant to go off except for the light kind of around the manger, around Jesus. But the year six kid who was kind of controlling the light panel accidentally blacked out everything until one of the sheep said in a really loud whisper, you've switched off Jesus. Kind of the big bit that he's meant to get right. Christmas understood properly resonates with hope. It's actually about very great hope that God sent his son into a broken world to restore it. To start with the problem of people. To overthrow every evil that has to do with people. To end all the mourning caused by people. To renew every heart, every willing heart, the heart of people. And it is an offer that answers the longing in every soul. And can I suggest, with news so good, you'd imagine that people would leap for joy. Like Chris, where is he? How do you pronounce that name again? Christopher. Christmas Rules, that's it. Yeah. Now, he was pretty excited, wasn't he? And you'd expect you'd be as excited as that if someone who had power said to you, I intend and guarantee I'll get rid of the brokenness of this world. You'd expect it would be as good as that. But instead, so many people just turn people off. Now, that's a strange response. In view of God's extraordinary kindness, and that's what I want to show you this morning. I want to show you God's extraordinary kindness. I want to show you three things about it. And you'll find it on that sheet that we've given you there. Firstly, you see God's been kind in making the evidence for his offer so compelling and so clear. You know, some people respond to God's offer by being skeptical. They're skeptical about the Christmas story. They say, I'd take Jesus seriously if only the Christmas story came with evidence that a thinking person like me could investigate, could check out. But that's exactly what God's given. You get just a glimmer of it in the opening verses there where Luke is at pains to show how these events are solidly grounded in time and space and history. Verse 1, he says, it was in the days that Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. And he goes on, just so you can peg it down a bit more closely. It was the first census. It was the one that took place when Quirinius was governor of Syria. Just so you know, and you can check it out. Because Luke's a doctor, you see. He's got a doctor's mind with all the details that a doctor has and better handwriting. He wants his readers to know, you can check it out. You can check out the Jesus event. It has substance. And what's more, God's kind to the skeptic who wonders, is this a myth? Is this just a story for kids to make Christmas a bit special? But God puts paid to that. He publishes the blueprint for his plan well in advance. Hundreds of years in advance, centuries and centuries in advance. Isaiah, Micah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, all those Old Testament prophets spell it out in fine detail. You ever wondered why you've got an Old Testament that's so thick? It's because God's giving the skeptic every reason to be sure there's substance behind his very great Christmas offer, so that when he brings it into fruition right on time, you'll know this is not an accident. God's kept his promise of hope. You know, from time to time in the Sunday papers, although does anyone ever read Sunday papers anymore? Don't you just read it online or pick it up on Facebook or something like that? But the Sunday papers or Channel 2 or SBS, they run a story about a prophet called Nostradamus. Who's heard of Nostradamus? Yeah, a few of us. Yeah, years ago you might have heard of Nostradamus. He was a Frenchman. He was a pharmacist, actually, and he turned his hand to prophecy. And people from time to time in the Sunday papers and on SBS put the prophecies of Nostradamus on TV because they think they're so stunning and wonderful. But
They're nothing compared to the Old Testament prophets who give you God's blueprint for his rescue well in advance, so you'll know this is not some accident. So you'll know there's substance behind the Christmas event. So it's strange to switch Jesus off because we think the hope he brings is just a pleasant tale for kids that you tell once a year that's got no evidence. No, God's given lots of it. This is just a taste of it because he wants us to have hope. He wants people like us to have hope. But secondly, God's kind in the way he comes to us in Jesus. You know, some people are angry with God. That's what I found. They switch Jesus off because they're angry with God. And perhaps you can relate to it. They've experienced some hardship. Perhaps you have. Life has been bitter. It's been broken. And in their pain, they've cried out to God. They've asked him to come and help, and they felt he stood at a distance. He's been unconcerned about them. He's not come and helped. But the events of Christmas tell you otherwise. What kind of God in what kind of universe does what this God does to rescue a runaway world? He does this extraordinary thing. Rather than stand at a distance, he comes in the flesh into a broken world, born to a poor couple, sentence 7 there, who got nowhere to go. He's born in a manger. Like, you know what a manger is? It's a food trough, like for pigs. Do you think that was accidental? Jesus comes born in a manger? No. It's deliberate. Absolutely deliberate. It's God sending a signal loud and clear. He won't stand at a distance. He doesn't intend his world for that. He's come near. He's come into a broken world. He's entered right into it. And that's why God's first announcement, see it in sentence 8 there? It doesn't come at the temple. Sentence 8 doesn't say, and there were scribes and Pharisees and religious dudes who were keeping watch over their scrolls and their religious rituals. It doesn't say that. And it doesn't. He doesn't go to the wealthy or the social elite. So verse 8 doesn't say, now there were kings and princes keeping watch over their crown jewels. No, sentence 8 says this. There were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. We think God makes his announcement to the shepherds because they're kind of romantic figures, shepherds. You know, they've got cute and cuddly sheep. They roam the hills and care for. No, they're nothing like that in the ancient world. Shepherds were nothing like that. They were the most despised group in Israel. They were cut off from everybody. They were not actually thought fit to hang around with the rest of society. They were ceremonially unclean, was the word. Not fit to be witnesses in a court of law. But God chose them for this specific reason, because he knows the pain of life in a broken world. And he came to that world. And he came to the greatest, but he came to the very least that we might have hope. He's tremendously kind to the greatest and to the least. And here's the third thing. See, others switch Jesus off because they're doubtful. And I wonder if that's perhaps some of us. Oh, you may attend church week by week, but actually you've got your own secret doubts. People are doubtful that the events of Christmas Day, they're just too supernatural. You know, there's all these angels floating around. You've got those in verse 9 there. And there's glory and there's singing and there's light that shines out of the darkness. And man, that's just so supernatural. And we don't see stuff like that happen these days. And how could it happen here? You know, a number of years ago, I went out to Arimba Uni, kind of the intellectual centre of the Central Coast, Arimba Uni. And I interviewed some students and I asked them, what were the reasons they were doubtful about Jesus? And I always remember one young guy who put it like this. He said, well, because like, Because like Jesus does all this kind of miracles and stuff, and he like rose from the dead, and nobody else ever does that, and kind of anything like that. But isn't that exactly the point? Yeah, nobody else does anything like that. Nobody in your experience or mine. But if God's own Son took on human flesh and appeared in our world to bring hope to people who are in the darkness, would you expect it to be ho-hum? Would you expect it to be just rank ordinary? Wouldn't you expect the extraordinary? Imagine he did nothing miraculous. There was nothing supernatural. Would that be any more convincing for you? I don't think so. Yeah, it was supernatural. But that's exactly what you'd expect, if you were fair-minded about it. And likewise, the reaction of the shepherds is exactly what you'd expect in verse 9 there. They're terrified. Wouldn't you be? They're terrified. When people feel as if God is far away, I wonder if you've ever experienced this. Some people speak angrily against him. They sound really brave and very sure of what they'll say when they meet him. When I meet him, I'll give him a piece of my mind. I'll ask him why he did this and why he did that. Like Stephen Fry on that, the Top Gear host, he put out a YouTube video at the beginning of this year explaining what he'd say if he ever came face to face with God. But in the scriptures, whenever people like us come face to face with God or the things of God, which is what's taking place here, they're terrified. Terrified. But notice the response in verse 10 from God's messenger to these frightened men. It's full of assurance. Don't be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. And this is the news. Today in the town of David, a Saviour has been born to you. He's the Messiah, the Lord. This would be a sign to you, because you're going to need a sign. Here's the sign. You'll find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in the trough of pigs. You want the sign that God's coming to the world? Well, he's come to be with the meek, the lowly, the helpless, the destitute, the people who are crying out for an answer to the reason why life is so painful. He comes with gentleness. He comes with compassion. He comes with very great care. He might have come with anger. We've stuffed up his good world. We have treated him with contempt. But instead he sends a saviour, a rescuer. He sends his own son to take on flesh, to come in person, to live life among us, to bring us the hope we need to calm our fears. Now, the Old Testament says this about Jesus. It says, a bruised reed he won't break. A smouldering wick he won't snuff out. That is, he is gentle. He's gentle. He's kind and compassionate. He's kind and compassionate even with those who cover up their hurt with an angry exterior. And say, I don't trust in any God. I don't want any God. I'm too big for that. But you can trust him. He is big enough and good enough for you. And he comes to people like you and to me. And he holds out tremendously great hope. You know, some respond to God's good news of Christmas Day by being skeptical. Some respond with anger. Some are doubtful. They think it's a story for kids. But the shepherds model a right response. Notice it right there at the end. Precious, actually. Verse 15. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and check this thing out that's happened. That was my paraphrase there. Check out the thing which the Lord has told us about. And they go and they check it out. A news as good as this demands a response like that. God's not concerned with the impressive and the wealthy. God is not concerned with the religious or the powerful. Do you know who God's concerned with? The responsive. He's concerned with the responsive. And to them, he offers absolutely everything. You know, some years ago, during the war, a famous American art collector got news that his son had been killed in action, saving the life of a fellow soldier. And the following Christmas, the surviving soldier, the friend who'd been rescued by him, who was himself an amateur artist, presented the father a portrait of the son that he'd painted while they were in basic training together. Now, it wasn't a masterpiece. It would be kind of a bit like me painting a portrait of, you know, one of you. It wasn't wonderful. But it became special to the collector because it was the painting of this son that he treasured, and he now, in the years that followed, there was tremendous loneliness for his loss. Years later, when the art collector died, he left instructions about his collection that it be auctioned on Christmas Day. But to everyone's surprise, the auction began with a painting that no one had ever seen before. They weren't expecting it at all. It was the painting of the son. Who will open with a bid for $100? The auctioneer said. And there was nothing. There was no response. It was suggested by the people, well, move on, move on. But the auctioneer persisted. He said, no, I'm instructed we need to sell this painting first. So they waited. And eventually a friend of the old man offered a small sum. It wasn't $100, it was just a much, much smaller sum than that. I knew the boy, he said, I knew it, I'd like to have the painting. Will anyone go any higher? The auctioneer asked. There's no response. So the painting was sold. And everyone breathed this tremendous sigh of relief because they figured, well, now we can get on with the real business of the auction. And to everyone's surprise, the auctioneer stood up and declared the auction over. Stunned disbelief. What about this collection? It was very simple for the auctioneer. According to the will of the Father, whoever takes the son gets everything. And that's the point of God's Christmas offer. In his son, he's given everything. He's given his absolute best and dearest. And to those who respond to him, he gives everything. He gives them life and joy and meaning and purpose and forgiveness of a broken relationship. And he gives them the thing that crowns all of those things. He gives them hope. Hope that's not just for this life, that extends beyond this life. He gives it all in his son. And I want to urge you to respond to the son. I want to urge you, those of you who know him this Christmas and know the certainty of his forgiveness now, because you can know that now, I want to urge you that during this year, think again about your response to the Son. Think again about it. He is worthy of your best. His service is perfect freedom. Don't hold back in this year to come. And friends, I want to urge you, those of you who are new to these things, if you've never responded to them before, maybe you're doubtful about them. Perhaps you've never reflected on them as an adult at all. I want to urge you today, here's a very great opportunity for you to change that. If these things are true, then they are wonderful. They are wonderful, extraordinary. They demand your adult investigation. Do you know, I'm not sure if Rick mentioned before, we've got a bunch of Bibles down there. They're free. If you're one who's here this morning, you've never investigated these things, or you think you ought, take it. It's on us. Have it. And while you're lying on your bed full of food on Boxing Day and you're kind of eaten and drunken yourself into oblivion, pull it open. Start at a gospel. Ask yourself the question, are these things true? Join us for Summerfest. Rick mentioned that a little bit earlier. It'll be an awesome time for your kids, but it'll be good for you. Join us for our summer series to consider the question, what does Jesus say about the biggest issues in life? Come and investigate that. You know, a genuine Christian life, genuine Christmas, means 100% hope. Be responsive. Take hold of it this Christmas. You know, Josh is going to come down the front here and he's going to help us reflect on these things by playing a piece of music. And I want to urge you, this is free. If you want to respond to these things, you want to ask a question, you want to make a comment on this morning, well, fill in that response form. Rick will tell you what to do with it later. Josh is going to play something for us. Thanks, Josh.